Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Royal Blue Podcast. A little bit of an impromptu edition of the Royal Blue Podcast. We weren't planning to record the podcast today, but then the football and world kind of imploded on itself on Sunday evening. So we've been forced into action. I'm your host, Adam Jones, joined today by Phil Kirkbride, Dave Prentice and Chris Beasley. And obviously, the main topic of conversation is going to be the Super League chat, which obviously was announced on Sunday evening. Six clubs from the Premier League, three clubs from La Liga and three clubs from Serie A, all announcing their plans to create a new competition called the Super League. And it's been met with quite vociferous response, I'd say, from fans, pundits, politicians, governing bodies, everybody involved. But Phil, we'll start with you. We're here obviously because of Everton's response to the news on Sunday evening. They've released a pretty strong statement this morning, didn't they?
Very strong for Everton, and I mean that in the nicest possible way. I think when we were sort of told that it was likely that a statement would be coming from Everton at some point today on the back of this Premier League meeting, which is probably finished, I guess. Now, as we record, it started at 11 a.m, didn't it? The feeling was at that stage that a statement would be in line with what all 14 of the other clubs were saying, and it was very going to be much a united front type of statement. No problem with that. And I didn't really have any major issue with Everton not putting their head above the parapet at that stage, if that's the way it was going to go. So surprised and pleasantly surprised to get a message at just after 9 o'clock this morning saying, there's a statement coming your way. We'll let you know. And then even happier to see the contents. Strong doesn't really sort of do it justice, does it? It was both barrels to the six, wasn't it? Really was. I don't think they could have used any firmer language. The six clubs, and I say six clubs, and obviously, it's the people at the top of the six clubs, it's not the players, it's not the fans, it's not the managers. But for the people at the top of those six clubs, they can be left in no uncertain terms as to how Everton feel, and Everton's strength of statements and their fury, anger, disgust that came off the page of the statement will not be lost on anybody. And I think they spoke for not just Evertonians, but for everybody in football who is opposed to this odious plan. And I was mightily impressed because, as I said, I wasn't expecting it. And I think at times the football club over many years sometimes perhaps don't speak out or don't use their individual position, if you like, and perhaps do want to perform a united front and perhaps just go with the greater cause. And I'm sure they have reasons for that over different things. But today they came out on their own and just gave the six both barrels. And I thought it was really, really impressive.
I'll read a little short extract from the Everton statement, just in case anyone hasn't seen it. Everton is saddened and disappointed to see proposals of a breakaway league pushed forward by six clubs acting entirely in their own interests, six clubs tarnishing the reputation of our league and the game, six clubs choosing to disrespect every other club whom they sit around the Premier League table, six clubs taking for granted and even betraying the majority of football supporters across our country and beyond. He went on to say that these six clubs have shown a preposterous arrogance as well, which I think was probably the highlight for me of the statement. As Phil says there, Brenner, like, it's strong, probably doesn't even cover it, does it?
No, I mean, sometimes the Everton board can be seen to be too proper sometimes and are very, very keen to see to do things, you know, so in a very dignified and a very correct fashion, which is laudable. But in a situation like this, which is unprecedented, you know, so in all our, you know, so football watching days, I mean, people have referenced the Premier League, you know, coming into being in 1992. This is nothing like that. This is like, you know, so completely different a game. I think the circumstances warranted something as strong as that. Now, I know Everton have referenced six clubs. But I think what's absolutely key to this is that we share a city with one of those football clubs. And so for Everton to have been as strong and as firm as they have in the knowledge that one of those football clubs literally is half a mile across Stanley Park is absolutely key. Now, there's been no great affection between the football clubs for a long time now. I mean, there was a time, you know, so when the clubs lived hand in hand, they were very, very close. I mean, John Moores was, you know, actually, you know, so had a financial interest in both clubs. I know that wouldn't be allowed nowadays, but, you know, so it did happen as recently as the 1960s. And the clubs were close for a long time. That has not been the case recently. I know, you know, so people on the Everton board haven't been hugely impressed with the way that, you know, some members of the Liverpool board have, you know, conducted themselves in certain circumstances. But they've still behaved properly. They've still acted correctly until this moment comes. And I think it just underlines, you know, so how damaging Everton believe this will be to the structure of English football, you know, where everybody believes, you know, that it will be. I mean, a lot of clubs have spoken out. I mean, Fulham made a statement this morning. Other clubs have. But for Everton to make this statement, which actually involves one of their neighbours, you know, so and a club very, very close to us, I think is hugely significant. And to me, entirely warranted. I felt pride in Everton Football Club when I saw that. I thought it was absolutely the right thing to say. And it was it needed to be as strong as it was. And from what I've seen on social media, you know, it seems that it's been very, very well received by, you know, sort of the large proportion of the Everton fan base as well. So, yeah, you know, so fair play to Everton. You know, so absolutely commend them, you know, so for a statement as strong as that. And, you know, so hopefully when we hear what's come out of the Premier League meeting today, you know, so they'll be supported by everybody else within that meeting, as I'm sure they will be.
And Bees, you know, Phil wrote a piece a short while ago about Everton's reaction to this and Farhad Moshiri's reaction to it, which we'll get onto in a little bit. But I think the most like interesting bit from that piece is that, you know, the timing of this statement is what sprung out to me. You know, it could have been easy for Everton to have just sat back and, you know, as Phil said earlier, just wait and, you know, release a joint statement with the other 14 Premier League clubs, and that would have been fine and nobody would have batted an eyelid. But, you know, for Everton to come out so strongly this morning shows just how much anger that the club have held over these issues, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like you say, they got a preemptive strike, and they could have waited and could have come out just as strong as this afterwards. But like you say, before the meeting had actually taking place, and we know that the club's chief executive, Professor Denise Baxendale, is supposed to be a strong voice in that meeting. So we'll wait to see what comes out of that. But yeah, it's really taken everyone by surprise, isn't it? You wonder whether the people in the corridors of power at Goodison Park knew about this, you know, much further down the line before the rest of us found out on Sunday. But what's struck me has been with the universal condemnation of it, or like we say, parallels to the creation of the Premier League. But there is, as Dave has alluded to, very different. What this is about, people have talked about the greed from the owners, but it's the removal of sporting integrity. Whatever changes have taken place over the years, the tweaking of formats, etc., everyone has always had their place at the table on merit, you know, the organic promotion and relegation system, which exists throughout European sport and in professional football. Yeah, professional football has been about money since day one. I mean, at the end of the day, Liverpool Football Club was created because a Tory businessman wanted to make money. He was left with an empty ground that he wanted to fill. So we know all about that, and we expect nothing more from these owners. They, you know, they are there for their financial interest, but what they're doing here is not just protecting their own interests, but they're it's a closed shop, isn't it? And it's removing everyone else, and it's deciding who's a member and who isn't, and over no sort of tangible reason why you are a member, other than you're one of that chosen few. I mean, Everton Football Club is very rightly proud of its heritage and its history. It's won more league championships than half of those teams in that group: Tottenham, Chelsea, and Manchester City, but they wouldn't expect to be placed anywhere, not on merit. It's where you are in 2021 or any given year, not whether you're chosen to be any part of any exclusive private members club.
Just sorry to interrupt. I just something I've been thinking about for a couple of days since this came out. The barefaced like front of Tottenham
with a big one, like, yeah.
And I feel on a very, very small part complicit in this. And I think in the media generally we have fallen foul. And I know I've written it too many times for comfort now. I've talked about a big six, and I think we've accepted that as a phrase. And I think, and look, and I know a lot of people listening to this will have said, no, we'd never liked it. And that's absolutely true. And there's been a lot of people against it. I think I've been guilty of just using it, you know, lazily too often. But this idea that a big six was created has worked massively in Spurs' favour. And you know what? And I call it barefaced cheek, and it is. But equally, I almost applaud Daniel Levy because he's used it. He has used it to the maximum leverage to get his football club in amongst a group of teams who the other teams have actually won things. Yeah. I think what was the last Spurs trophy was a League Cup in 2007, maybe?
Maybe 2008.
And look, we can't poke fun at teams having not won anything since 2007. That's not the point. But what I'm saying is, Spurs are no more elite in English football than Everton.
No.
And yet they're in, and I just laughing to myself that they're in this conversation. So it's just another thing on top of this just, as I said, this odious plan. That's just, sorry, I just, it was just on my mind. I just no. Spurs, just.
No, it's quite interesting you say that, Phil, because, I mean, some of the things I've seen leveled at Everton on social media, by some fans, only a handful, is that, yeah, but, you know, so if you were invited, you'd be in there as well. You know, so you'd jump at the opportunity of being in there, wouldn't you? And I've replied to a few of these people saying that I don't believe we would. Farhad Mashiri was asked that question directly this morning, and he gave a two-word response, never, never. Now, okay, you can say we're being a bit naive and saying that, you know, so he hasn't been invited, so therefore he would say that. But I genuinely do believe, you know, so the board of Everton feel as strongly as this about it. They've always done things in the correct fashion. Farhad is surrounded by lifelong Evertonians on that board. And, you know, so he knows exactly how they feel about, you know, so direction of their football club and how that reputation would be damaged, you know, so if they weren't involved in anything like this. So while Daniel Levy might be cynical and going for the big power grab and the big money grab and getting his, you know, sort of his club out there, I have faith in, you know, so the Everton board that they wouldn't have accepted this offer had it been invited to them. Maybe that's me being a little bit naive, I don't know. But I just think sometimes that, you know, when football clubs are taken over by foreign owners, you leave yourself open to this possibility. And I know Farhad Mashiri is Iranian, you know, and he was at Arsenal initially. But equally, you know, he has got a core of, you know, sort of Everton supporters around him. And not many other football clubs can say they have that. And that's important. You know, I really do think it makes a big difference where Everton are concerned. And I'm quite pleased that we do have, you know, sort of fans, if you like, in inverted commas, at the heart of the football club.
Mm. Well, let's talk about Mashiri a little bit, Bees. I mean, he talked on Talk Sport, as Preno said there. He said, every fact of it is against the very idea of British football. Football clubs are community assets. They belong to the fans and to the communities. This takes much of the romance of football away. It's something which makes the game a money game. It's not football anymore. And then he was quite strong in calling for points deductions for all the clubs involved in that as well. And I know that's been a very popular idea, not just on social media, but you know, we've seen the likes of Gary Neville saying that as well, haven't we? You know, very, very soon after the announcement was made. So, you know, it's just another huge official from Everton just making a very, very strong and, you know, pretty just spot on the money statement, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he talks about that, the financial aspect, but like he's talking about the sporting aspect, which we've already alluded to. I know, obviously, Adam, yourself, you attended that Everton USA function over the weekend, and there's a real American flavour to this whole concept, really. It's Real Madrid using the American owners to sort of get them a new cash cow, but it's totally alien to like say British supporters, European supporters, and probably even I would imagine the sort of sport that Mr. Mashiri had grown up with in Iran. we have that concept, promotion and relegation. You move up and down on merits, whereas obviously in the USA, with the NFL, Major League Baseball, that the Liverpool owners are involved in, it is a closed shop. There is no promotion and relegation. The minor leagues are kept separate, and those teams never go up and down. I mean, some of the teams even move thousands of miles across the country to new cities, so they're not ingrained in a community the way that European sports teams are, British sports teams are, or whatever else. It does feel like these American owners, it sits a lot easier with them, whereas to us who have just grown up with this organic system where, you know, teams can go all the way up to the top or fall down to the bottom. It just goes against everything we've known in professional football since the start.
Mm. You know, going back to Machidi's comments there, Phil, I mean, you know, points deductions, obviously we're recording this before the results of this Premier League meeting have come out, but, you know, points deductions are just something that's proven, you know, a very popular view from all the people that I've talked to about this, essentially. I mean, I feel like, personally, that seems like the only way to go. But, you know, obviously there's huge ramifications that come with it, and whether the Premier League go down that route is yet to be seen. But it does feel like there's a very, very much a groundswell for you know, a punishments along those lines, doesn't it?
Well, the Premier League have got to do something, haven't they? Because if they don't act, then it's effectively carte blanche to the six to do as they please. You know, and so I don't believe that no action will be taken. I think they'll make some action. Expelling them, relegating them, I think, as Gary Neville had suggested, or something. It feels very extreme, and I think it would be so damaging to the Premier League product, as you so to speak, that damages the rest of the clubs, I guess, going forward with TV deals and stuff like that. So I don't think that feels a little bit too extreme, but I don't think points deduction should be off the table. I think it should be very much at the top of the discussion because, and I know people are saying, look, we need to think about this calmly and we can't get too emotional over the whole subject. And we need to think about what we're going to do clearly. And we don't want, you know, mad decisions that may have ramifications. But equally, I also think a statement needs to be made. The top six of, sorry, there's me slipping back into it again. These six clubs have made a statement of their own by signing up to this breakaway league. So it's time that the Premier League, i.e. the 14 other clubs, issue one back. And that has to be something that means something and has an impact and makes these clubs think again. And points deductions seems like a really sensible option to me. And I know Farhad caused a bit of a stir when he said that. And I know sometimes Farhad can say some things that are a little bit wild and perhaps, you know, left field, but I think I think he's on the money. I think the Premier League have to come out fighting, you know, and I'm hoping that the strength of Everton's statement is indicative of the feeling of the other 13 clubs and of the Premier League board in this instance.
Mm. I mean, obviously, it's not just the Premier League that we've got to consider in this either, is it, Preno? I mean, we've got to consider UEFA as well. A lot of these clubs are going for European qualification next season. Will they be able to play in the Champions League, the Europa League? I mean, it's the ramifications for what they've done this weekend are just mind-boggling, really, aren't they? Like, it seems that everywhere you turn, there's like a new, will this competition be affected? Will that TV deal be affected? It's just mind-boggling, really, isn't it?
It says, yeah, and I would imagine UEFA's response is going to be the most interesting of all because they are the body that is most threatened by this. Obviously, the Premier League is threatened, clearly, because, you know, for argument's sake, last night's match, Liverpool against Leeds, Liverpool very, very disappointed to have dropped 2 points that leaves West Ham in the box seat for Champions League qualification. Now, in a new European Super League world, that'd be meaningless. Be like, oh, it doesn't matter, we're in it anyway, you know, so why do we need to worry? So the Premier League ceases to be a competitive competition for, you know, a lot of clubs. But UEFA, you know, the Champions League is looking to be replaced in its entirety by this new competition. So I would imagine their response is going to be, you know, more aggressive, more muscular than perhaps anybody. I've seen only rumours at the moment that the teams, you know, so currently involved in the Champions League semi-finals who are pitching for this European Super League could be thrown out and replaced by, you know, the teams who are beaten in the quarterfinals, you know, your Borussia Dortmund, your Portos. That's only a rumour at the moment. But I wouldn't rule anything out because, you know, so UEFA are effectively fighting for their lives. And they've got to try and squash this as quickly as possible. I'm worried about the whole thing. I genuinely am. I mean, I listened to Jamie Carragher and Gary Neville last night, who spoke brilliantly again. And they finished almost like on a positive, like, you know, they feel emboldened now that, you know, if they can manage to persuade one club to break ranks, it'll all collapse like a pack of cards. I don't know, you know, so it's obviously, you know, the six clubs involved in English football have thought long and hard about this. Florentino Perez's statement in Spain was bizarre. But again, it underlines, you know, so how it's financially driven. The two Spanish clubs have overcommitted, you know, that they are in financial crisis and they need this money as a bailout, basically. You know, they've been bailed out by the governments in the past, the Real Madrid have, but, you know, they're seeing this as a way of, you know, so propping up the football clubs. But UEFA are fighting against all of that. I wouldn't be at all surprised if their response is really, really aggressive. And, you know, obviously Champions League semi-finals due to take place very, very soon. So that could be sooner rather than later. But yeah, Premier League might even, you know, sort of second guess that and actually, you know, sort of take strong action of their own. I wouldn't rule anything out at the moment. These are unprecedented times and there needs to be, you know, really, really forceful action. And if they do take forceful action, I would absolutely applaud it. And now it's not the manager's fault, the player's fault, the football club's concern, but what else can you do? You know, so you need to make those football clubs pay. And, you know, unfortunately, their owners, that's possibly the only language they will listen to, you know, sanctions against them, which hurt them and which damaged them.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I suppose B's what has been heartening in some sense to see across the footballing world is the likes of Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund, Paris Saint-Germain, I think Porto as well, all announced that they've turned down a potential place in this Super League. And you can only hope that other clubs, whenever they're asked, are going to be able to follow that lead now.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we've mentioned about Everton and Everton only saying no because they were never going to be asked. But I think that does show that there are teams who would have been there, who would have been asked a question and have said no. I mean, we've got to consider what this is like for the rest of the football world. The statement claimed how the clubs who have signed up for it are still very much committed to the Premier League. But I mean, they would say that. I mean, what would happen in the long term? Would it be a clean break and just become a European Super League? Would that just leave Everton in a rump Premier League, best of the rest? You wonder what the ramifications for that is. On the one hand, might make it a more competitive league for Everton. Everton might have a much better chance of winning the title again, but it very much be a second-rate competition to what had gone and left them behind with. I mean, there's obviously the new stadium been proposed. I mean, hopefully the work will begin on that now, finally, this year. And that's all geared up to Everton competing at the highest level like they have for the vast majority of their existence. And they're not going to want to watch, you know, a second-rate league if these bigger, more resourced clubs are playing their football elsewhere. Also, you know, Carlo Ancelotti, he's committed to the long term at the club. He's been used to committing it to competing at the very top of the European game for his entire career. So, I mean, where would that leave us all if these teams do sail off into the sunset?
I think these are important questions, aren't they, Phil? You know, especially when Bees is saying, you know, if these are to break out into just a league by themselves and leave the rest of the Premier League to go by their own means. Let's say Everton do win the Premier League in that hypothetical future. You know, what would that even mean? Like, it just wouldn't be the same, really, would it? You know, a league win, you know, without six of, you know, these six, you know, pretty historical clubs in English football, especially in recent years as well. Like, to win a league without those in it just feels a little bit hollow, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I don't think any fan of those six clubs should be under any illusion that we would want them to just disappear in the sunset and we have a league without them. Because if we want success, we want to have done it by beating and competing with what is, you know, the best league in the world, and that means the best teams, you know, that's your City, United, Liverpool, etc. That is including those six clubs, you know. And I think it would take, you know, if those six clubs were to just go off on their own and not be part of a Premier League or the top flight in England, you know, it would take a huge cultural shift for us, you know, for us and other teams to really buy into English football in its reshaped form. I think there's also a question about what FIFA are going to do, isn't there? And forgive me, I can't remember what piece I read last night. But there was a really strong and interesting point where they mentioned, well, FIFA are seemingly trying to expand their World Club Cup, and so their stance on this has got to be interesting, because there was a suggestion is that if they come down hard on this European Super League, are they not being hypocritical because they want to try and expand the World Club Cup competition? So I think UEFA, as Pranell mentioned, it's really sort of life and death for them. And I think they need the support of FIFA as well as the Premier League to be in a strong enough position to resist this. So I actually, you know, when it was Sunday evening and then into Monday, and I was thinking about it, and my initial reaction was, this is just for leverage. You know, this is just brinkmanship, the timing of it ahead of the UEFA meeting, ahead of these changes they were bringing into the Champions League. It just felt like that level of opportunism. But the more it's rumbled on, the more and more I've just been concerned about these six clubs and the other clubs around Europe are deadly serious. But that's going to strengthen the resolve of the rest of football to stop it in its tracks.
Mm. I think Phil brings up an excellent point there about the timing of it. The fact that it's happened midway through a season for me is like the most shocking thing. We talked about Liverpool playing against Leeds last night. Well, let's say Liverpool do go off and create a Super League now. What was the point of them playing against Leeds to, you know, even try and, you know, help out their Champions League hopes or, you know, European football hopes? It was pointless. There was no point, was there?
I think the timing is significant. We're in the midst, or hopefully near the end, actually, not the midst, of a worldwide pandemic, which has hit football clubs hard. You know, financially, football clubs have had to tighten their belts significantly across the board. And I don't think Liverpool are in any kind of financial trouble, but they're not making anything like the kind of money that they would be making under normal circumstances. And so this is a pretty cynical way of like plugging that gap. But then equally, they're in empty stadiums, you know, so there is no way that fans can actually do what they did when they tried to introduce £77, you know, so tickets at Anfield and protest and leave the ground early. And, you know, ironically, they actually said that time that, you know, they admitted they got it wrong, message understood, you know, so we exist to look after the fans, we are custodians, said all the right things. But clearly they were just talking through their hats, you know, they were just, you know, basically coming out with sound bites because they don't believe that at all, you know, so they're in this to make as much money as they possibly can. So, yeah, I think the timing was significant. A, the suffering financially. B, this is a way of addressing that. And it's a nice happy coincidence as well. There was no fans around to tell us that we're wrong, you know. They're wrong in that respect, by the way, as well, because, you know, social media is a very powerful tool these days. And as we saw yesterday with Liverpool supporters, you know, so putting banners and flags up outside Anfield, they've been taken down now, you know, by you know, officials of the football club. But equally, supporters who've got banners around the ground, Spire Cop 1906, Spirit of Shankly, supporters groups who've actually requested that their flags be taken down inside the ground because they are so appalled and disgusted. I mean, I spoke to Bill Shankly's grandson this morning, who's so upset that he actually considered asking the club to remove the statue of his granddad from outside the ground because it carries that wonderful message. He made the people happy. And he believes that, you know, what the current owners of the football club are doing flies in the face of, you know, so those values and that kind of ethos. So people are very, very angry, very, very upset. And they can make that point, you know, so in ways that maybe, you know, so the owners didn't think was possible. So, you know, the message will be got across. Whether they listen to it, I don't know. We have to wait and see. But yeah, the timing, whilst being curious coming midway through a season, I think probably you can understand why they've done it at this time as well. I mean, we've been hearing these stories for a long time. There's going to be a European Super League. There's going to be a European Super League. And we just always, like, you know, dismissed it really as being, you know, a way of just trying to leverage for a little bit more influence on the Champions League. When it happened, it was like, wow, I wasn't expecting anything quite as big as that. And we now need to fight it. You know, we now need to object to it and, you know, so resist it, you know, so with every fibre of our being, because, you know, it will kill football as we know it if they get their way.
And the issue is, though, the issue here is because football has become so much more of a global game, hasn't it? And look, Everton are trying to expand their international fan base, like every club who've got ambitions, absolutely, no problem with that. But because these six clubs, I mean, perhaps less so Spurs, but certainly the other ones, that the other five in that list, have got global fan bases. This says to me they are not bothered about their local fans in the community where they are rooted, because this is all about producing a product for TV, and they believe that they can still these games, these Super League games against the same clubs every season, will draw in enough of an audience from their fans around the world, whatever part of the world that is, and it doesn't matter about the match going fan. It doesn't matter about
Phil, the legacy fan, as they've been called, the legacy fan.
But there you go. It's just use of phrases like that. They just get you back up, don't they?
Yeah.
And that's what this is about. Every club wants to expand. Everton are no different. They want to grow their global audience and fan base. And absolutely, that's what ambitious football clubs do now, because the Premier League is a global appeal. But what these clubs are trying to do is take that with them into this European Super League and say to the other 14, sod you, basically. And they're saying, we believe the Premier League is based on what we're about, not what you're about. Well, sorry, two fingers, you're not going anywhere. Let's stop it now, because it's absolutely hideous. And, you know, Preno and I are big boxing fans, and, you know, boxing is a sport that makes you tear your hair out, because it's riddled with maddening decisions and fights not happening and all this sort of stuff. And I was just thinking in comparison now, boxing must be laughing its head off at football. Football is meant to be so much more organized, in line, got its stuff together. And, you know, and football's becoming a laughing stock if this goes through. And it's just, and as Preno says, the game as we know it will die, won't it?
Mm. I mean, fans are at the heart of this, aren't they, Bees? I think, you know, obviously we're catering to Everton fans here, who, you know, obviously, you know, Everton aren't involved in this breakaway, but, you know, you do have to feel sorry, really, for the supporters of those breakaway clubs, who, you know, they weren't consulted about this, they haven't been asked anything about this, and they're going to be the ones that are going to be losing out the most, aren't they? Because, you know, these clubs are going to be flitting off all around Europe, playing whoever in midweeks every week. They're not going to be playing domestic leagues anymore. They're going to be probably having a few games in America along the line as well. Their clubs have essentially become franchises at this point, and
That's why I think that the whole proposal is actually deeply flawed. It's not just that we all dislike it, and almost like you said, like we're jealous not to be part of it. And the support, I don't know any supporters of the clubs involved. I mean, primarily that's Liverpool supporters who we know, but we don't know anybody who's in favour of this. Like you said, it's not geared up for fans. So hopefully at some point in the not too distant future, be capacity crowds. Again, you can't. I mean, it beggars belief. I mean, how some of these loyal supporters go watching their teams in Europe, you know, season in, season out. Anyway, but if you've got all these games across Europe, you're not going to be able to have the away fans there on a major basis. You can't afford that, so that'll take away from the atmosphere. And it's almost
it won't matter to them, will it? Because they'll just view it as like another pre-season tour.
Nah.
Yeah. They'll pack out these stadiums because they'll go to America.
The local fans, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it won't matter to them. And the TV audience, the TV audience will make up for it.
Yeah. But yeah, any sort of atmosphere, like we say, with the fans and the supporters of those individual clubs, I mean, yeah, they're not for it. It's almost like asking for Christmas every day, isn't it? I mean, Klopp himself has said, you know, you don't want Real Madrid against Liverpool every single season. I mean, when teams have been drawn against each other in Europe a couple of years on the bounce, I mean, it gets tedious anyway. That's why the Premier League is such a popular product globally anyway, because of that competitiveness and the fact that the team who's bottom of the table on any given day could beat the top of the, table side. A lot of divisions across Europe don't necessarily have that, or the excitement level that comes with that and the support. So, yeah, I think it's just deeply flawed on every level, the plan. So they think it's going to be their big cash cow and their big saviour in these times of financial uncertainty. I don't think it would be necessarily in the long term.
Mm. And I suppose the hope, Preno, is that, you know, I wrote about this yesterday, and I think Gary Neville mentioned it as well in his quite powerful messages. But he, like, this does kind of just need to be a catalyst for change now, doesn't it? Like, you know, for, let's not pretend the football was perfect before the these Super League announcements came in. You know, money has always been the deciding factor. Well, I say always, for the last few years, money has been the deciding factor for football, and it shouldn't be. And fans should be at the heart of every single club. And it's just not been the case, really, has it? I've seen a few calls for the Bundesliga model in particular, the 50+1, in terms of fan ownership. I mean, is that something that you'd like to see implemented across the board?
Oh, I'd love it, yeah. It's, I can't see it happening. But yeah, there are definitely lessons to be learned from this. I mean, the Premier League is almost like a distilled version, you know, sort of this European Super League. And I'm hesitating when I say this because it's not, it's different in many, many respects. And yeah, the Premier League was generated to create money, you know, so to generate more money. But that money was equally shared equally among, or relatively equally amongst, you know, the member groups. You know, it was 24, was it initially, or 22, then it came down to 20, you know, so Premier League members. And as a result, football now is massively, massively different to football pre-1992. We had very, very dodgy, you know, so archaic stadia that resulted in, you know, major tragedies, you know, so within them. The actual makeup of a football fan is very different now. You know, so back then it was basically young working class lads. You know, you wouldn't see very many women at football grounds. You wouldn't see families, certainly. And as a result, hooliganism was rife. That has changed. That has changed as a result of the money that's come in to the ground and the difference into the Premier League and the different, you know, sort of makeup now of, you know, football fans. So it's been good in that respect. But there are still problems, you know, so the way fans are taken for granted in terms of kickoff times, the way fans are told, you know, so, you know, they can't, they've got to make their way home from London at, you know, so 1:30 on a Sunday night. You guys yourself know how difficult it can be, you know, following football, you know, so clubs around the country. Those kind of things have to change because fans are the lifeblood of this game and we do take them for granted. And hopefully it can be a wake-up call, you know, and, you know, the Premier League, you know, can say, well, okay, you know, we need to give a little bit in that direction and try and, you know, sort of give a little bit back, more than just money, but, you know, so actually treating people, you know, sort of better, because, yeah, otherwise we'll end up in this situation again, you know, so, you know, 3 or 4 years down the line, if this, you know, can somehow be, you know, sort of stopped and halted in its tracks. I mean, the Premier League on its own, I think, is a good product. You know, it's a great product. It's why, you know, it's so popular the world over. And it's why people look at us, you know, so enviously. But equally, it's not perfect. You know, there are lots of, you know, sort of improvements that can be made. And yeah, we can learn lessons from this, undoubtedly.
Mm. And I suppose, Phil, you know, to learn those lessons, it just needs to have, you know, a groundswell of support, doesn't it? Fans need to unite together behind this, you know, whether whatever club that they follow, whether they're one of these six clubs or whether they're one of the other 14 in the Premier League or one of the other, you know, 80 odd in the Football League, you know, that everybody just needs to band together behind this, don't they? And, you know, call for real change, because, as I say, things weren't perfect before this, and this has kind of just shone a light on the issues that we already had long standing in this sport.
Yeah, and that's why these six clubs have used the pandemic as a cynical opportunity to force through the changes that they want, these self-serving changes. But yeah, no, I think Gary Neville said it last night, didn't he? Or Cara, it was, you know, it's time to mobilise, isn't it? You know, it was very much a call to arms, wasn't it? And he wasn't overselling it. I think he's absolutely right. And as Preno said, it's disappointing and sad as it is that fans aren't in the ground at the moment as it is, but fans ultimately going to have to vote with their feet, or do they vote with their wallets in terms of renewing season tickets? Do we vote with our TV subscriptions? You know, do we have to force the TV company to put pressure on football clubs? I don't know. Something has got to change, but it feels like the last 48 hours have been a positive step, because the six, although they may wish to ignore it, and may to some extent be ignorant, they will be aware of the feeling. And, you know, look, we, you know, I think it's fair to say that we don't have a great deal of faith in any Tory government, particularly this one. But at least they appear to be on board, and on board quickly. So, as I said, FIFA needs to make their stance clear. Premier League will find out today. Maybe when you're listening to this, we will know what they're going to do. And let's just—I think it's one of those things that can't be put down and allowed to sort of just drift into actually happening, because that's what these clubs want. They'll just try and weather the storm, but the storm needs to keep raging.
Mm. And just to finish off, Bees, you know, we bring this back full circle to Everton, of course. I mean, Denise Baddock-Baxendale sent an email to supporters shortly after the club released a statement, and, you know, involved in an email, it was made very clear that Everton were a founder member of the Football League, founder member of the Premier League, but they're keeping their hands completely clean from any of this kind of stuff. And, you know, I wrote yesterday that I hope that Everton can be at the heart of whatever changes come from this. And, you know, that's got to be the hope, really, hasn't it? You know, that there will be changes and that Everton can lead the way, almost.
Yeah, we alluded to it before, didn't we? The fact that all previous changes have included this idea of, you know, you go up and down on merit. Nobody's expecting you to be there under any other sort of circumstances. I think there was a bit of controversy when Everton were initially chosen in the Football League ahead of Brutal Bootle, their original Merseyside rivals. But there was quickly a second division established of the Football League. And, you know, it worked its way up to become that football pyramid. Same with the Premier League at a time when Everton would be considered part of the Big Five, as it was called at that particular time. They were very much a driving force behind that with Sir Philip Carter. But yeah, this is totally different, whereas those Everton have been proud founder members of both the Football League and the Premier League. They like we said, this is completely different, and it flies in the face of all sporting integrity.
Mm. Well, lads, this has been a fantastic chat. I mean, obviously it's a very tough issue for the sport, but I think we've all discussed it really well there. Thank you for listening. We'll be back a little bit later in the week to preview some actual football, which will be nice. Everton against one of those six clubs, Arsenal. So I'm sure this discussion will probably come up again on that podcast a bit later in the week. But we'll be back to discuss that game. Don't forget to rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts from. And don't forget that you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook as well. Just search for the Royal Blue Podcast on there, and you'll be able to find us all and ask us any questions that you might have. Thank you for listening to the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.